Father of Storms. Written by Dean Jones. Produced by Be Here. Episode 14.
Be Here. Bringing books to life. Vision without sight.
Chapter 27. Desperation of Æthelbald. It had been 2 days since the meeting with Seth. Æthelbald paced his rooms like a caged animal waiting to be released. More than once he had barked at the unsuspecting servant for little more reason than he needed someone to shout at. It was a soft knock on his door. He stopped and looked towards the sound. He had expressly forbidden any interruptions, and his ire rose. There was another knock, this time louder.
"Who is it?"
he bellowed, but there was no reply other than another, louder knock on his door.
"Come in,"
he shouted.
"And hope you have something important or I will have your head."
He stood expectantly, watching the door, waiting for the owner of the knock to enter. A thumping came next, and Æthelbald's patience entirely dissipated. He stormed over to the door, practically ripping it open, ready to assault whoever was playing games with him. In front of him stood a man he had never laid eyes on before. His cloak was neatly wrapped around his shoulders, and he carried a staff that seemed out of place on this man. A prominent, hooked nose protruded from his smiling face. The appearance of assured confidence did not quell Æthelbald's anger.
"Ah, King Æthelbald,"
the man said.
"I was beginning to wonder if you would ever answer your door, or simply content yourself to leave me standing here."
The smoothness of his speech caught Æthelbald off guard, and he felt his anger subsiding as he gazed back at this man. He held the door as the man glided into the chamber, then scanned the room, taking interest in the plush rugs and adornments he had collected. The room had several trophies from many battles he had won. There were rich, colourful tapestries on the walls, jewellery and adornments lined up across a shelf near his windows. Some of the golden bangles he was proud of, as the detail of their design was magnificent. The reds and browns inlaid into the metalwork were amongst the best examples he had seen. On his wall were bronze shields adorned with beautifully worked designs. His collection was still growing, and he had his eye on one or two items he knew were held within the keeps of those northernmen that would suit his chambers. The man picked up several of his possessions to inspect before moving around to other items. Then, finally, sitting at his desk and examining the maps and scrolls laid out across it.
"Do close the door, my dear man,"
the man instructed. Æthelbald found himself doing as he was asked without any hesitation. Still standing beside the door, Æthelbald watched as the man lifted up papers, apparently reading the information contained within them.
"A fascinating lot, these Northmen. Wouldn't you agree?"
the man said as he turned his head to look at him. The smile fixed to the man's face instantly raised Æthelbald's ire, and he felt his senses return.
"Fascinating,"
the king finally replied.
"They are dogs and savages."
He slowly made his way across the room to stand on the opposite side of the desk. Æthelbald stared at the man across his writing table and tried to recollect who it may be. Surely he must know him, as he had allowed him entry to his rooms. But searching for the memory in his mind was like sifting mud. Nothing came to him.
"Who are you exactly?"
he finally asked. The man smiled at him and could feel a warm confidence filling his body. He suddenly felt this was someone of importance with whom he must speak.
"My name is Corey, and I am at your service, King Æthelbald,"
Corey said smoothly. Æthelbald gave a slight respectful bow in Corey's direction, then gestured to the chairs beside the fireplace, inviting him to sit. As they moved to the chairs, Æthelbald heard a buzzing in his ears. It seemed to come from inside his head, and he shook it, attempting to remove the offending noise. He heard Corey chuckle as he sat down beside the roaring fire.
It amazes me that a man with your intellect has managed to raise himself to the station of king. Although I suppose it was your father's work, really. And you just happened to be in the right place at the right time.
Corey's lips curled into a smile, which didn't seem to reach his eyes. Æthelbald sat in the other chair and was taken aback at the clear insult, but strangely felt he shouldn't be angry, as he knew it was correct.
Well now, I think the niceties are satisfied. Let me get down to the reason for my visit.
Corey started. Æthelbald heard the buzzing intensify, but didn't feel the need to clear his head, as it seemed natural that it be there.
I believe we have a mutual acquaintance. His name is Seth.
Æthelbald's eyes widened at the mention of his bodyguard's name.
Yes, he is. I mean, was head of my personal guard,
he confirmed.
Yes, yes, of course he was. Well, my interests in him have been long in developing. He is married to my niece, you know. Lovely girl, but not the sharpest knife, if you get my meaning.
Corey didn't wait for a reply.
Well, Seth has something I would like to use. And it is proving a little difficult for me to obtain, as he is a stubborn ox. Don't you agree, Æthelbald?
He asked.
Ah, well, yes, stubborn. Yes, he is somewhat. He has decided to abandon my guard to have a family, of all things.
He glanced at Corey as he shook his head indignantly.
He has agreed to fight alongside me against the scum from Wessex. But after that, the selfish bastard will leave me unprotected without him at my side. He is a magnificent warrior.
The king mused aloud.
He is, that I hear. And yet, it is not his skill with a sword I hope to obtain.
Corey leaned forward, and the king felt his stare burrowing into him as his eyes were locked in his gaze.
I need something much more valuable. But having tried over the years, I have found his mind is like a steel trap. Nothing I do seems to allow me access.
Comment hung in the air as Corey's eyes drifted for a second.
Unlike you,
he continued as his attention snapped back to Æthelbald.
Who has a mind like soft pig shit. So easy to manipulate, and yet to do so leaves you feeling dirty and in need of a wash.
Æthelbald nodded his agreement. Clearly this man knew what he was talking about and felt he should listen to whatever he had to say.
Well now, I think we are ready.
Corey stood, then turned his back to the fire to warm himself.
I need Seth to be broken mentally. And, as I understand it, you need him to remain by your side to protect you. So, what we have here is an opportunity to work together to reach a conclusion, which would be mutually beneficial. You help me gain access to Seth, and I will ensure he stays at your side.
The king nodded as Corey reached down for another log from the basket, then placed it delicately into the fire.
Now, there's this priest in Seth's village called Ripley. He has taken it upon himself to accuse my dear Seth of witchcraft and demonic acts, which, according to his Bible...
Corey's face screwed up as if tasting something nasty for the first time.
Anyway... His book is explicit about these things, so I suppose his accusation is not too far from the truth.
He punctuated his statement by prodding the fire with the poker. The flames grew and began to spark.
I need you to fully understand that Seth cannot be harmed by the likes of him. So it is up to you to convince this fool that the person he is looking for is actually my niece, Meredith. He will, of course, kill her. Which is a shame, as I like the girl. But the death of one so close to Seth will be the opening I need to take control of his mind.
He looked up from the fire and back to Æthelbald. The king nodded again, though felt the strange urge to stare into the fire as his mind became empty. Only the words of Corey seemed to find purchase, as all other thoughts slipped away.
I did try this once before, but the person I killed wasn't close enough to Seth for the effect I desired. He was upset, of course, and her untimely death caused him a moment of weakness. But his wife, you understand, she kept him strong. So May's death was for nothing. Well, it was fun for me, I suppose.
Corey smiled.
He is a magnificent creature, though. All muscles and integrity. A marvellous combination, don't you think?
Aethelbald nodded absently.
Of course you agree. Why wouldn't you?
He smiled again before clapping his hands together. Sound brought Aethelbald out of his trance and back to the room. He watched as Corey returned to his previous seated position opposite him.
As I was saying, my king,
he continued,
I believe Seth is innocent of these claims. And as such, you should perhaps direct Ripley on another path so that the true witch, if that's the correct term, can be found and dealt with.
Aethelbald blinked, trying to get his bearings.
I believe you are correct,
he said finally.
Seth is far too godly a man to be caught up in this type of scandal, given he is head of my guard. But I have not seen evidence of his demonic ways, if they existed.
Aethelbald sat upright in his chair. The information he had been given was valuable. He now needed to do something with it.
Of course I would have. No, Ripley must be told to leave Seth in peace.
He thought for a second, then, as an idea formed through the buzzing in his mind, he smiled.
Naturally, his wife would become the main suspect of such crimes. But I'm sure Seth would fully understand. God's will is absolute, and all those who act against him shall be weeded out and dealt with.
He paused for a second.
Once she is out of the way, then of course, Seth would have grief and anger to deal with. But where better than at my side in battle to get over his loss?
He got to his feet and placed his hands on Corey's shoulder.
Thank you for your counsel, Corey. Once again, I'm in your debt.
The king steered Corey towards the door.
My king flatters me,
Corey said as he walked.
I'm merely providing a service, as any good subject would.
Aethelbald opened the door, then showed his guest out. He caught the guard's attention, telling him to pass on the message that his advisor should be provided with a reward for his services. He watched as Corey stepped down the corridor towards his treasury with the guard, before closing the door and returning to his chair beside the fire. It had been a tough couple of days, but he now saw a solution to his problems. With his army heading out for battle soon, he knew it was time to act. He could not allow Seth to leave his side. This was the only way to ensure his continued loyalty. He smiled to himself as he warmed his hands.
No wife, no family, and no reason to leave,
he sniggered. Chapter 28, Deja Vu. Seth let out a groan of pain as he opened his eyes. The now familiar process of checking his body for the wounds created by the regular torture was becoming tiresome. But he knew it was important to keep a mental check on how his body was healing. He raised his hands. Both were now heavily bandaged. He gave his fingers the instruction to bend, but they refused. He sighed again, remembering Hector as he had smashed the hammer into each hand in turn, and the glee on his face as the blood splashed across his jacket. The sessions were almost identical each time. Seth had lost count of the number of times he'd been asked the same question, but there wasn't an urgent need from them for him to answer. It was almost as if they were using the questions as a reason to torture him, rather than torture him to answer the question. He raised his head to examine the ruins that were his legs. Both knees were strapped. His right foot was also now covered in dressings. The sight brought memories of the implements used and the look in the eyes of his torturer as he struck again and again. Nausea filled his stomach as another wave of pain rushed over him as he adjusted his position. Looking back down, he attempted to move his toes, but agony only greeted him with the slightest flinch of his big toe. Again, he recalled Hector with his pliers, breaking each of his toes in turn as Harvey asked,
How do you do it, Mr. Goodman?
He was still pleased to discover he retained all his teeth. Marcy loved his smile. He would be annoyed if they did anything to upset his wife, and the loss of teeth would surely do that. The TV still showed a 24-hour news channel, but it seemed the only story was about him and the events he couldn't remember. Still scrolling across the bottom of the page were names of those who had supposedly died in the attack. Seth watched, knowing that at the end were the names of Marcy and Hope Goodman. Sure enough, they appeared. He kept his eyes on the screen as they slowly made their way across the bottom. He blocked out the words the reporter was saying as the names of his family reappeared 60 seconds later. The door suddenly opened. In strode Dr. Garrett.
"Well, I must say, Seth, you know how to take a beating,"
Garrett commented as he began to check his dressings.
"I do find it incredible that only after a few hours of sleep, your wounds show remarkable signs of healing. Truly astonishing."
He looked Seth in the eye.
"I would love to study you further. Perhaps once this nasty business is concluded, my employer will agree to a small scientific test or two?"
His eyebrows lifted as if asking for Seth's approval. Seth frowned.
"That would be wonderful, Doctor. Torture followed by being prodded and tested in a laboratory, like a little holiday."
Seth couldn't stop the sarcasm. The whole idea was ridiculous. He was a man, not an animal.
"Maybe,"
Garrett smiled.
"You would welcome a less violent approach? But that's for the future. Right now, we need to ascertain your fitness, so my colleagues can continue to find creative ways to add further injuries, which I am required to patch up."
The doctor completed his examination, then beckoned to the door where the same frightened man who had brought him refreshments previously approached the bed with a tray of sandwiches and another jug of water.
"Eat up, my fine fellow,"
Garrett said as he left the room.
"Oh, and be sure to get some more sleep. It's very late, and you have an early start tomorrow."
Seth watched the door close before he reached for the food. He found he was hungry. After polishing off the meal and emptying the jug, Seth struggled to his feet before falling to the ground. Gritting his teeth, he dragged himself to the corner of the room where the toilet was. Thoughtfully, there were handles either side for him to use to haul himself onto the seat. The indignity of having to do your ablutions with people watching was clear, but it had to be done. Seth sat for a long while after he was finished, trying to muster the energy to return to the bed. He closed his eyes, knowing he would see the same images of his family he had over the last few days, but he needed to focus on the matter in hand, and that was getting from the toilet back to the bed. As he concentrated, he could sense someone in the room with him. Opening his eyes, he was surprised to see the same man sitting in front of him that he had met on the first morning. He still had his white hood over his face, but Seth looked him up and down and saw he was wearing blue denim jeans and brown leather sandals without socks. The image of this old man wearing a hoodie designed for teenagers was amusing to Seth, and he let a smile creep across his swollen face.
"Nice to see you remain in high spirits, Seth,"
the man began.
"I must admit, you are much more stubborn than I remember. But we continue to try, as eventually you will break, and I will get what I want from you."
Seth's smile broadened.
"I doubt that. I'm still waiting to learn why you are keeping me here and where my family is."
"Your family is dead, Seth. I and all my employees have repeatedly told you this. Even the news reports their demise."
He glanced up to the screen on the wall.
"Why do you refuse to believe what you see and hear?"
He raised his hands to his hood. He looked as though he was going to remove it. Then, seemingly thinking better of it, he placed them neatly back on his knees.
"You've told me lies. I would know if they were dead, I would feel it,"
Seth said calmly. The buzzing in his head increased, and with it came the images of their dead bodies.
"What are you doing?"
Seth bellowed.
"Stop messing with my head!"
The man sat back, clearly shocked. The buzzing stopped completely. Seth suddenly had clarity in his mind for the first time in days. Now he could feel the injuries he had sustained. He drew a quick breath as he focused his mind internally. He intuitively knew that healing himself was the best use of this respite. The man leaned forward, clearly having composed himself again.
You are a remarkable man, Seth. I always knew you were. From the first time I saw you, I knew.
The buzzing hit him again, this time with greater ferocity, and Seth wavered on the toilet. As he tilted, he had to grab one of the handles to stop himself falling off.
I will get what I want. Eventually.
The man got to his feet, then began to shuffle out of the room.
You will not break me. I want to know what you have done with my family.
Seth screamed at his back, but the man seemed not to hear as he continued through the door before it was closed behind him with a click. Seth breathed heavily at the exertion of keeping his wits about him. After a minute or two, the buzzing in his mind had gone back to its irritating murmur. He found he could stand and walk across the room to his bed. He wasn't sure if this was due to him healing himself, or if the anger he felt blocked out the pain. Sitting on his bed, he began to hear a familiar whisper. He turned his head to the left and right, trying to orient himself to the direction it came from. Settling on the door, he focused to try and pick out the sounds before falling back on the bed and letting his eyes close. Chapter 29. A Conflict in Wessex. The day had arrived. All the planning had led them to this point. Seth readied himself. He had said his goodbyes to Meredith that morning. He was content that he would be back soon to begin their new life together, out of the village, away from Æthelbald and the demands on his time. The Mercian army was gathered outside of Tamworth. Thousands of men lined up ready for battle, with a craving in their eyes that meant only one thing. They were ready. The sun glinted from sharpened steel and armour as they waited for their moment of glory. They were a fearful sight. Æthelbald sat at the head with Seth and his other bodyguards beside him. Things had been awkward between Seth and Æthelbald since he had informed the king he wanted to leave his personal guard. But Mercia still needed him, so he was here leading the other bodyguards to battle. He noticed the king was in high spirits and his previous anger at his announcement had subsided. Seth put his good humour down to the coming battle. The border of Mercia now stretched to 4 days' march, so they knew they had time to gather more warriors as they passed down the country towards Tetbury. Æthelbald gave the order to advance, and their mighty force rumbled into movement. They set off in the early morning sunshine towards Wessex and the inevitable conflict as they sought to take Malmesbury. The morning passed quickly. Seth noticed the army was in full voice and high spirits. They had yet to lose a battle where Seth was present, and he knew he had become a good luck omen for the rest of the warriors. Superstition still played a significant part in their lives, even though they had mostly converted to Christianity. Seth was proud, as he knew he had the respect of those who would fight with him. It was going to be a wonderful battle. In his head, he planned to make his last one something all would remember, so when he returned, none would even consider crossing him. By the end of the day, they had made excellent progress, and as the sun set, they put up camp outside of Worcester. That night, they had many visitors from the town, eager to gain favour with the king. Seth tired of the pleasantries and grew frustrated at the sight of his king wallowing in the compliments and gifts they brought. Seth moved beside two guards and whispered his intent to slip away, instructing them to be vigilant of their king in his absence. He knew he wouldn't be missed, as Æthelbald was too engrossed in his boasts to notice. Moving away from the gathering, he made his way into the night toward a campfire where he knew he would find better company. The men rose as he entered the firelight. He waved a dismissive hand as he sat down among them.
No need for getting to your feet, men. I am no one special and certainly do not require you to leave the comfort of your furs to welcome me.
The men murmured and sat back down. Seth warmed his hands over the fire, and the men waited to see what he would say.
Carry on. Don't let me stop your conversations. How are you feeling? Are you excited? Fearful? Let's talk.
Seth encouraged. The men looked at each other to see who would speak first. Seth sighed as he scanned around the men he had for company. He saw the faces of 5 boys who were hardly men at all. Looking across the fire, he picked out one of them.
You, lad, where are you all from?
He asked. The boy flinched at being the focus of Seth's attention. Seth noted the boy blushed and hoped the firelight would hide this lad's embarrassment. Seeing Seth still holding his eye, he swallowed before answering nervously.
We're all from Repton, my lord.
No need for any my lord nonsense. Call me Seth. I'm just one of you. No fancy titles are needed between friends.
He instructed, although he knew the etiquette surrounding his position as head of the king's bodyguard. He was not in the mood for protocol. He just wanted an evening of conversation with normal men without agendas.
What's your name, lad?
Seth asked, quickly cutting through the uncomfortable silence.
John, my lord. I mean Seth.
He glanced at his friends around the fire and gave a smile.
Well, John, I'm thrilled to meet you. How is Repton these days? It's been a while since I was there last. It's fine. It's growing quickly, but the land is rich and folk are godly, so it's a good place for my family.
John flicked his dank brown hair from his eyes, then reached up to stroke the patchy beard. Seth nodded.
Do you have a wife and children?
A smile crossed John's face.
I have a beautiful woman at home, Seth. She's carrying my first son.
The pride was palpable. Seth laughed.
You are certain it is a son? Have you seen the child in your wife's belly and examined his jewels?
The others around the fire laughed too at his comment. John started, but Seth raised his hand placatingly.
I jest. If you are sure the gods have provided you with a son, then no man can question until the day he or she arrives.
Mention of gods raised eyebrows, but they were all aware of Seth's beliefs. No man there would challenge him on them. This jovial exchange seemed to break the ice. Before long, they were all laughing, reminiscing with tales of their wives and past battles while knocking back ale. Seth felt a weight lifted and stayed with them for an hour or two before making his excuses. As he moved away, he could hear the laughter of his companions drifting with him. As Seth strolled past the king's tents, he noticed he was still enjoying the attention of his retinue. Feeling no desire to join them, he continued past towards his bed. He wrapped himself in his furs as he settled down for the night. He smiled, remembering his exchange with the men from Repton, before drifting off into a restless sleep. The days passed quickly as they marched south through the rich and varied countryside. Dense woodland that was older than time filled the horizon for over a day as they kept to the Roman-built roads. Each night, Seth joined a different campfire to exchange stories and laughter with the men. This kept his spirits high. He found he was looking forward to picking out a fire, then starting conversations with men from all over the kingdom. At noon on the fourth day, the army reached the outskirts of Tetbury, a small market village of less than 100, but enough to add a few strong arms to their contingent. They made camp while messengers were sent to the town to request their leaders attend the king. They had swelled their ranks by another 3,000 warriors during their journey. The gathered men were all eager to take on the kingdom of Wessex and show Sigebert, their king, the true force of Mercia. It had been a war of words between Æthelbald and Sigebert for months. The politics had drawn the worst sort of mood from the king, and it was this which had led to their planned battle. Sigebert needed to learn a lesson, and the king had become too big for his boots, according to the king. Æthelbald had decided the time was right for the new King of Wessex, and he had been sending messages to his manors, spreading rumours to anyone who would listen. It was the most dignified way to fight a battle. But Æthelbald wanted to make sure any army Siegbert raised to stand against Mercia would have heard some stories circulating their own lands. He knew their loyalty would not hold them on the battlefield when the Mercian army was in full flow. After they had made camp and eaten their meals, Seth sat with Æthelbald and the rest of the bodyguards in silence in the luxurious tent of their king. The ornate chair that travelled everywhere with them sat atop a plinth that raised Æthelbald up above any who he allowed to enter. In the centre there stood a table that the king certainly sat at, finishing his meal. His bed, filled with lush furs and soft pillows, was off to the left and placed upon a woven tapestry. The king gestured to the rest of the guards to show that they were dismissed after completion of his meal. Seth rose to leave with them, but Æthelbald raised his hand for him to wait. Evidently, his king had something to say. Seth hoped whatever it was would lift the discomfort between them.
I have heard news from your village, Seth. News which has a disturbing flavour to it.
Seth sat back down, looking towards Æthelbald with curiosity on his face.
What news have you heard, my lord?
Seth was intrigued by whatever this information might be, and eager to find out.
I have heard rumours that you have been praying to the devil to protect your farm through the winter months and to provide you with a healthy supply of piglets to sell at market. Is this true?
Normally, when someone accused him of something, he would react in the only way he knew. This approach would generally end the discussion quickly. However, as it was the king who made the accusations, he was sure grabbing him by the throat would not end well.
I have no idea where this has come from, my lord. I have had to deal with these lies since I arrived in your court, and I have a good idea who is spreading them.
Seth had an image of Ripley in his mind, and he promised himself that when he got back, he would deal with this man once and for all.
Nevertheless, I cannot have one of my own guards caught up in this kind of storm.
There was a silence which hung in the air between them, which neither was eager to break. Finally, Æthelbald spoke again.
Can you assure me it is not you who is involved in this devil worship, as some claim?
Seth nodded.
I can, my lord, swear on my honour that I am not involved in devil worship, as you put it.
Seth knew he wasn't lying, but he also knew where the rumours had come from. His sows had all given birth to at least 6 healthy piglets, which would fetch a good price at market. He knew others were jealous, but he had tried to help as many as possible by buying poor quality stock and seeds from the others in his village, as well as helping where he could heal sick and diseased animals, or bring rain when it was needed, using spey.
Excellent, Seth. I have no reason to doubt your word, so I will ensure all are aware you have nothing to do with the witchcraft which has occurred at your farm.
Æthelbald rose to his feet, then headed back towards his chair, waving his hand to dismiss him before Seth could answer. Seth left, then sat alone by the fire, trying to work out what had just happened and whether he had heard Æthelbald correctly. After deciding there was no benefit in dwelling on the conversation, especially since tomorrow he would likely be knee-deep in battle, he headed for his bed to try to get some sleep. Morning came quickly. Seth felt like he had hardly slept during the night. The conversation was still replaying in his mind, and he was keen to speak with Æthelbald again about the matter to ensure he understood what he had meant. Æthelbald, however, was nowhere to be found. Word got to Seth. He had headed out early in the morning to set up a forward line in readiness for the day's battle. This caused Seth some unease, as they hadn't intended to do this. Any deviation from their plans was risky, as far as he was concerned. Seth rounded up the village leaders, asking each of them to ready their warriors. He was going to set off straight away, as Æthelbald would be outnumbered and likely fall if they didn't get to him quickly. They left the camp as it was, leaving behind a handful of the older men to ensure it was there when they returned. Seth led the army, setting a quick pace to meet with Æthelwold. After a while, he could see the king and the rest of his personal guards involved in a skirmish ahead of them. They were facing over 24 soldiers, all dressed in bright colours of Wessex. From the looks of it, they had managed to claim the high ground above the road and were pelting down on top of the guard, trying to get to Æthelwold. The sun was now high in the sky, and bright light blinded the king's guard as they stared up at the Wessex men who had the sun at their backs. Seth raised his arm, then looked back at the force following him.
"Your king is in danger. Raise your spears and charge!"
Seth's voice boomed over the heads of all the warriors, and the urgency touched each one contained in his instruction. As one, they raised their spears, then charged. Seth could see Æthelwold struggle to hold his position as he pressed forward towards his leader.
"Ah, Seth, so glad you could join us,"
Æthelwold cried as Seth crashed into the enemy with his sword and spear in hand. There was a fury of fighting as they quickly overwhelmed the men holding their king at bay. Seth watched as several of the group of Wessex men were quickly dispatched, with the rest driven back down the hill by the oncoming force of the Mercian warriors. Seth took his sword and wiped it on one of the men he had killed. He noticed with interest that the man's own sword, which had an ornate hilt decorated with Woden's symbol, and decided this was now his, and removed it from the dead man's hand. Æthelwold regained his composure, then placed a hand on Seth's shoulder. Looking around at them all, he called for his army to advance on the enemy position. Seth looked down into the valley and saw the Wessex horde gather. There were thousands of souls on this field, and he knew the day would end many of their lives. There was a roar as they descended onto the valley floor. Clashes erupted immediately as both sides fought for position. The cries of men filled the air, some in pain, others in jubilant victory. Seth stayed close to his king, protecting him from any attackers who made it through the line to where they had positioned themselves. His hand never moved from the hilt of his sword as he scanned the battle lines ahead of him. He ached to enter the fray, but knew to leave Æthelwold would be careless, as he had already proven his stupidity by leaving in advance of the army. Battle carried with it a certain smell. It was the mixture of sweat and feces which made any battlefield distinctive. Today was no different. The wind picked up and brought with it the stench of several thousand men fighting for their lives. The sight gave Seth immense pride, as he could identify many of the men he had shared stories with in the past few days, all engaged in the struggle to gain ground on their enemy. From his vantage point, Seth could see the battle wasn't going to plan, as their adversary had greater numbers in its ranks than anyone had expected. Below, the ranks of enemy soldiers maintained their shape as waves of Mercians battered them. Mercian arrows flew through the cloudless sky down into the advancing support, weeding out many of Wessex's men before they could bolster their defences. However, ground was being lost, so Seth quickly took charge of two village leaders, directing them to the western flank of the Wessex force to drive them toward the river, which was flowing to the right. This would give the Mercians a small advantage, as the Wessex soldiers could not retreat, so would break apart rather than be driven into the swollen river. No sooner had the 200 or so warriors headed off, Æthelwold gave an order for the ranks of men protecting them to follow and help push the enemy towards the river. Seth knew this would leave them vulnerable, so prepared himself for the inevitable. He was right. As soon as the Mercian warriors had left to support those Seth had dispatched, the enemy commanders spotted their chance to flood the space vacated moments earlier. Seth called out to those who had set off to the eastern flank to turn around and protect the king. It was too late. By the time they had returned to cut into the advancing force of over 100 of the Wessex, warriors had breached the line and were bearing down on Æthelwold, Seth, and the rest of the king's personal guard. Turning to face them, Seth quickly barked orders for them to form in a single defensive line in front of the king. Seth stood in its centre and discarded his spear in favour of another sword he had taken from one of the dead bodies from the earlier skirmish. The enemy was on them quickly, and they were pushed back by the weight of numbers. They were only 10 against the 100 trained warriors they now struggled to keep from their king. Seth fought powerfully, keeping himself between the enemy and Æthelbald. Two broke through the line and advanced towards him. Seth's sword moved in a blur as he dealt with the faster of the two by plunging his blade into his heart before slicing through the neck of the second, dropping him next to his friend at his feet. Slowly, as more of the guard fell, men broke through to advance on their position. Each who broke through was dispatched with ease by Seth, who was now standing behind several dead bodies, all bleeding into the earth beneath them. Seth felt they were making headway into the onrush of soldiers, but he knew at least three of his comrades had fallen. As he looked to his left and right for support, he found, to his horror, he was the only one remaining, and that he stood over Æthelbald's unconscious body. The king must have fainted from the fear of the situation, as Seth couldn't recall any but himself being close enough to strike any kind of blow that would knock the king down. He looked up to find at least 20 remaining enemy warriors circling him. Seth focused his mind, knowing the spey would help him. He concentrated on the space around him, willing the energy to thicken. He hoped it would form some type of shield and protect him for what was surely about to happen. Once he felt the energy around him, he took a deep breath before he set about the remaining warriors. One thought burning in his focused mind was of his wife and their new life together. He was not going to let himself be killed here today, no matter what. Seth's sword moved with speed and precision as he let out a guttural scream to let anyone near him know who they were dealing with. He saw fear flicker in the eyes of the two warriors to his left, so he moved to them first, killing both rapidly with efficient cuts from his sword. As each fell, lifeless from his blows, he spun around as a spear hit his side, but the energy around him caused it to deflect harmlessly away, allowing him to bury his blade into the throat of the man who had tried to take him from his wife. The Wessex fighters regrouped, then pushed forwards from two sides. Again, Seth felt a sword press into the energy around him before rebounding away. Once more, he drove his own blade into the offender's throat. The sight of spears and swords bouncing off him when the warriors knew he should be laying defeated at their feet seemed to give the remaining men pause, as they didn't appear as confident in their attacks, nor did they rush him as Seth expected. Instead, they approached cautiously, trying to find a gap in his defense. Seth turned and took two steps forward, causing one of his enemies to fall backwards over a dead bodyguard. Pouncing, he slashed across the fallen man's stomach, knowing he had inflicted a fatal blow. He turned his gaze to those who remained. Breathing heavily, he considered the four who stood before him and noticed the rest of their group fleeing away back to the main bulk of their force. Seth raised his arms above his head, inviting them to drive their weapons into him. His confidence had grown, along with his belief in the impregnable energy shield he had created around him. The men hesitated, not knowing what to do, until one threw his doubts away as he drove his sword at Seth's chest. The pain burned as the very tip of the sword embedded itself in his ribs. Quickly, he brought down his own blade to remove the offending weapon and its owner's arm in one fell swoop. Buoyed by the thought that the sword had inflicted significant damage, the three remaining warriors advanced as one, stepping over their writhing colleagues as he tried to stop the gushing stream of blood from his severed arm. They were hoping to catch Seth off guard so they could finish the job their dying friend had started. Their end came quickly. The last three warriors lay dead at his feet as the final man breathed his final breath as he bled out from the loss of his arm to Seth's sword. Looking up, he could feel the adrenaline surging through his body. he stood on top of the fallen warriors, then let out another roar, this time of triumph. Glancing around the battlefield, he knew the fight was now going their way. They had successfully driven the Wessex army back toward the river, meaning it was a matter of time now. Seth knew it. He became aware of a warmth entering his body as the shield of energy started to absorb the wound in his chest. He looked down at the stained chest plate of his armor, knowing the flow of blood beneath had ceased. Today had been a good day. He knew all would remember his name when they spoke of this battle. He could see the expression on the faces of his countrymen as they regrouped around the still unconscious king. Yes, they would remember. He was sure of it.